He is ready to rumble. Uh-huh. I will tell you, this speech tonight will be classic Donald J. Trump. It'll be funny. It'll be entertaining. There will be some shots fired tonight in the room.
What did she say?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Huh.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, right.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yes, I am. From Pacifica Radio. In Los Angeles, this is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Elsewhere in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI, Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallatin, Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, Delmarva FM, and most of your favorite podcast sites, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. I'm sure you agree, and welcome to the Bradcast. Delighted to have you all with us here after a crazy, busy weekend. And by that, I mean a year-long project that I've been quietly engaged in the background over the past year, learning a whole bunch of things along the way, finally coming to fruition over this past weekend with the help of a few incredibly supportive and persistent geniuses. And Desi Doyen was also there to help. Hi, Des. How are you?
Thanks. I'm sorry I don't rank among the geniuses, and, but I'm with you on that one, especially for the depth of what this required.
And after I had to figure out how to port over, with the help of all these folks, port over some 22 years and about 16,000 Brad blog articles, several hundred thousand comments, hundreds of gigs of audio, video, graphics. I was able to unveil my entirely new, long overdue, totally mobile and tablet friendly, by the way, version of bradblog.com. All new, which is, as of today, completely up to date with the latest, hopefully most secure, responsive, speedy software on a hopefully finally stable new server platform, which I hope you will come by and check out at brandblog.com. Tons of really cool new features, including nifty audio players for the broadcast and Green News Report and shows where, going back decades at this point, that you'll easily now be able to find with our new search system, a really fast threaded comment system. Come on by. Tell me how you like it. Or, of course, if you don't, I'm happy to hear that as well. Whatever bugs you might find, features you find missing or would like to see, there's now lots there to explore. And hopefully it'll be easier than ever to do so after a system design that has sort of been stuck in the pre-mobile early 2000s. For far too long, for reasons that I won't explain, that prevented me from being able to get it all updated until now. So I've been sort of working around the clock on that massive project, this overhaul. Since we last spoke last week, wasn't able to follow the news over the weekend because of it, running on about 8 hours of sleep, so no clue if I missed anything important that happened over the weekend or not. If you want to call and catch me up on anything I might have missed, of course, we will try, as we often do, at the beginning of a new week, to open our phones to you, or at least to those listening live in our Southern California listening area or anywhere around the globe via our kpfk.org live web stream. You can reach me at 818-985-5735 as I try to get to some of your calls in a little bit later this hour if you'd like to line up right now. And as always, as we believe in diversity, equity, and inclusion, we try to put both women and Trump supporters on the top of the list, if possible. 818-985-KPFK. But in diving back into the news this morning, after this crazy busy weekend, I did come across, well, this very troubling story today brought to my attention by our friend Heather Digby Parton at her Hullabaloo blog. I think she'll be joining us on the show later again this week, Des.
Yes. Coming up.
Well, shocking, but it looks like someone tried to kill the president. And I'm only hearing about this morning, thanks to Heather, via the UK's Guardian, which reported the 21-year-old man who was shot and killed after having entered Donald Trump's Florida resort on Sunday while carrying a shotgun came from a North Carolina family of the president's supporters, and had reportedly become increasingly fixated on the so-called Jeffrey Epstein files. The focus of the FBI's investigation into the intrusion, attributed to a man named Austin Tucker Martin, is tightening on his movements and his motives. Martin was confronted by Secret Service agents and a local sheriff's deputy inside the secure perimeter of Mar-a-Lago, and he was killed after he raised a shotgun into the shooting position at about 1:30 a.m. on Sunday, according to law enforcement. Martin was a recent high school graduate who is believed to have driven down to Florida from his home in North Carolina on Saturday afternoon, obtained a weapon en route to Florida. TMZ reported that Martin had grown increasingly obsessed with Jeffrey Epstein, a former friend of Trump and many other powerful people, notes The Guardian, after the recent release of files connected to the prosecution of the sex offender and disgraced financier. I think they're talking about Jeffrey Epstein there, just to be clear. The website said that it had obtained, the TMZ website, it had obtained text message that this is a man sent to a coworker early in February, according to TMZ. The text said, quote, "I don't know if you read up on the Epstein files, but evil is real and unmistakable. Tell other people about what you hear about the Epstein files and what the government is doing about it. Raise awareness." The 21-year-old, apparently attempted presidential assassin, came from Cameron, North Carolina, where his relatives described him as quiet, generally opposed to guns. Martin's cousin told the AP that the family was staunchly pro-Trump. Quote, "We are big Trump supporters, all of us," his cousin Braden Field said. "Everybody," he added, though, that Martin tended not to talk about politics. Field said Martin would regularly send a portion of his monthly paycheck to charity. He had difficulty, fathoming what authorities say that his cousin had done. Wow. Another attempt on the president's life. Another guy from a Trump-supporting family and background outraged by the material exposed in the Epstein files, which, as you know, unless you've forgotten about it over the last 2 months of Donald Trump's war in Iran, includes disturbing allegations made by a woman interviewed by the FBI 4 times, who claimed that she was sexually assaulted by both Donald Trump and Jeffrey Epstein when she was just 13 years old. But of course, that story, which you may or may not have heard about previously, I believe most did not, and many are likely even hearing about it here today for the first time. That story that I just shared with you was from late February. It was from just days before Trump launched what is so far his losing, world economy-shaking, apparently endless, seemingly forever war in Iran and the Strait of Hormuz. And I don't know why, but that story about this attempted assassin who, you know, came from a Trump family who was killed in Mar-a-Lago, that did not make much news at all at the time, it seems to me. On the other hand, over the weekend, at a gathering at the Washington Hilton for White House correspondents, well, a lot of news was made following a very similar incident to the one at Mar-a-Lago by that guy from a family of Trump supporters who was troubled about the Epstein files news less than just 2 months ago. As our friend Digby noted over at Hullabaloo when bringing that February story to our attention today, quote, obviously, this latest made a much bigger splash because it was at an event in D.C. where the president and his cabinet all there, along with most of the political press corps who are now making their rounds to tell, quote, their story about what it was like when they had to dive under the table and while they were eating their salads. It's really about them, she writes. So naturally, it's much bigger than that earlier attempt by a man who was actually shot dead at Mar-a-Lago. You know, we should really build a sort of a great big mansion maybe for the president in Washington, D.C. or something where, you know, the president could be kept safe 24/7, 365 so he doesn't have to go dangerously down to Mar-a-Lago every weekend, put himself at threat at taxpayer expense. But yeah, on Saturday, this past weekend, what was supposed to have been, ironically enough, under this presidency, a celebration of First Amendment freedoms at the White House correspondents dinner at the Washington Hilton, instead became another grim tribute to the Second Amendment. It was, of course, outside of that same Washington Hilton back in 1981 that John Hinckley attempted to assassinate then-President Ronald Reagan, hitting him, critically wounding him at the time, along with three others, including his press secretary James Brady, a Secret Service agent, and a police officer. A Secret Service officer was reported shot in their bulletproof vest on Saturday in the latest episode, but with several shots fired, the attempted assailant was taken down by the quick work of police and Secret Service well outside of the ballroom where hundreds of journalists and the president and the vice president and the House Speaker and the Secretary of State, the entire line of succession, in fact, were all enjoying their salads before Trump was preparing to give remarks, reportedly to attack the assembled press in what would have been his first appearance at the annual dinner as president, a private event sponsored by the White House Correspondents Association, Trump's first appearance while president at that affair, which most other presidents from all parties regularly attend each year while being roasted by a featured comedian. This year, however, Trump agreed to come only after the Press Association canceled plans for a comedian. Instead, they were going to feature a mentalist act, hypnotist or something instead. But that was not to be, and Trump was never able to give his remarks either to the assembled, as the event was canceled entirely after the appetizers and takedown of the would-be assassin after he had attempted to breach the magnetometers at a security perimeter that was set up by the Secret Service on a different floor from the main event. On Monday, the suspect, Cole Thomas Allen, was officially charged with attempting to assassinate the President of the United States, though Trump was not mentioned by name anyway in a letter that this man had written before the incident. As AP reported earlier this morning, the California man arrested in the shooting of the White House Correspondents Association dinner is a highly educated tutor, amateur video game developer opposed to the policies of President Donald Trump. Authorities say Allen was of Torrance, California, part of L.A. County out here, about 30 minutes or so, depending on traffic, southwest of downtown in the South Bay region. He was taken into custody at the dinner on Saturday night that was attended by Trump and top members of his administration. A social media profile for the man with the same name and photo appears to match that of the suspect. Shows that he worked part-time for the last 6 years at a company that offers admissions counseling and test prep services to aspiring college students. He reportedly contributed $25 to a Democratic Party political action committee in support of Kamala Harris for president in 2024, according to federal campaign finance records. In a message sent to family members minutes before the attack, being referred to as a manifesto, the 31-year-old described himself as a, quote, friendly federal assassin and railed against recent actions taken by the U.S. government under Trump, though he did not name the Republican president directly. The writings ran more than 1,000 words, including apologies to family members, to co-workers, to fellow travelers, and even to strangers that he feared could be caught in the violence. The note moved between confession, grievance, and farewell, as AP reports it, with Allen thanking people in his life, even as he sought to explain his attack. He also made a taunting critique of security at the Washington Hilton, where he was staying, mocking what he described as lax precautions and expressing surprise that he was able to enter the hotel armed without any detection. Elsewhere, the document veered between political anger, religious justifications, and rebuttals to imagined critics, at times reading as if he were arguing with detractors in real time, as the AP summarizes the note, explaining that they limit the use of attackers' writings and social media postings to avoid amplifying their views or encouraging copycat actions, which makes sense to me. The AP, the outlet explains, chooses to summarize the words and focuses mainly on the victims and the investigations. But the full letter is available now in many places online. It was published in full by Rupert Murdoch's New York Post, including the passage that echoed the assailant from that Trump family in North Carolina who was killed by Secret Service just a couple of months ago trying to kill the president at Mar-a-Lago back in February. With this weekend's assailant writing, quote, I am no longer willing to permit a pedophile, rapist, and traitor to coat my hands with his crimes. Which, by the way, is every reason to be outraged, but no reason, none, zero, to ever target a president or anyone else with murder. That is not how we do things in this country, or at least it should not be how we do things in this country, period. That no matter how many people have been abused and threatened and, yes, murdered by this president of the United States, from Iran to Venezuela to fishermen in the Gulf to U.S. citizens on the streets of Minneapolis, it is not up to us, to you and me, to take matters into our own hands with a gun. It is up to us to take matters into our own hands in the courts and in the streets, and most importantly, at the ballot box. The man's brother contacted police in Connecticut, in New London, Connecticut, after receiving the writings, according to a law enforcement official. He was taken down and arrested Saturday night, trying to rush past the security checkpoint with two firearms and knives. Law enforcement told the AP that Allen legally bought a .38 caliber semi-automatic pistol back in October of 2023 and a 12-gauge shotgun last year. Early reporting is that he transported those weapons across the country from California in his baggage on board an Amtrak train where, unlike airplanes, baggage is apparently not screened for firearms and is perfectly legal to pack weapons, bring them with you on the train. It is not legal to bring weapons into D.C., however, though the Trump administration has been rallying very, very hard to change those rules to allow more legally obtained guns into the nation's capital. The president's personal criminal defense lawyer, Todd Blanche, who is now serving as the acting attorney general of the United States. He was asked about that on Sunday on Meet the Press. But he didn't want to talk about changing any gun laws to make such attacks more difficult in the nation's capital or apparently anywhere else.
So the alleged shooter, as we just said, had multiple weapons in his possession. Here in the District of Columbia, open carry is not permitted. You just said he traveled from California across the country by train. At this point, are you thinking at the federal level of changing security protocols in any way to, for example, match on trains what you are expected to go through when you fly, where you do have to declare a weapon when you cross state lines? How did he travel by train without any challenge and arrive here in the nation's capital?
I mean, look, this isn't about, in my mind, changing the law or making the laws more restrictive around possession of firearms. It appears he purchased these firearms the past couple years. We don't know how those firearms ended up in his possession in D.C. We can make some assumptions based upon what I just said about how he got to D.C. Mm-hmm. But I don't think the narrative here is about changing laws or changing making our laws more restrictive. This is about law enforcement who are doing their jobs and a suspect who tried to do something and failed miserably.
Yeah. Right. Well, I'm not talking about changing the law in terms of possession of a firearm. I'm asking about crossing state lines with that firearm and arriving in the Capitol. If you try to fly, you do have to have your firearms declared in some way. You don't when you get on a train.
Well, look, you are talking about, I mean, if we're asking the question, that's talking about changing the laws. And I don't think that's something that we should be focused on right now in any way, shape or form.
Yeah, we should not focus on that. Don't focus on guns, people. Please, please don't talk about enforcing existing laws concerning guns. Don't talk about changing the laws concerning guns unless it is to make it easier to bring them into Washington, D.C., as the administration has been pushing for now for months and months and months. And apparently, while it was not the appropriate time to talk about changing gun laws anywhere, anytime, ever, it was the appropriate time for pitching Donald Trump's pet project for a huge new ballroom at the White House. After the dinner was canceled, Trump and his vice president and his wife and his cabinet made time for what was a very, very lighthearted press conference. Lots of laughs, in fact, back at the White House press room, where less than 2 minutes into his remarks about the attempted assassination, Trump began his pitch for his new ballroom, which received no approval from Congress and is currently being challenged in court. Less than 2 minutes into his remarks, he said this.
We looked at all of the conditions that took place tonight, and I will say, you know, it's not a particularly secure building, and I didn't want to say this, but this is why we have to have all of the attributes of what we're planning at the White House. It's actually a larger room, and it's much more secure. It's drone-proof, it's bulletproof glass. We need the ballroom. That's why Secret Service, that's why the military are demanding it. They've wanted the ballroom for 150 years for lots of different reasons, but today's a little bit different because today we need levels of security that probably nobody's ever seen before.
Yeah. The military is demanding it. The military is demanding a ballroom at the White House. Trump followed that up Sunday morning with a long screed on his failing social media site about how, quote, what happened last night is exactly the reason that our great military, Secret Service, law enforcement, and for different reasons, every president for the last 150 years have been demanding that a large, safe, and secure ballroom be built on the grounds of the White House. Trump went on to say in his tweet, this event would never have happened with the military top secret ballroom currently under construction at the White House. It cannot be built fast enough, he said. And his MAGA minions on social media answered that call with hundreds of them demanding that we build the ballroom right now. Quote, this is why President Trump needs to build the White House ballroom, wrote Andrew Colvett. Right-wing influencer Libs of TikTok wrote the exact same thing, as it turns out, but in all caps. Right-winger Jack Posobiec added, quote, "Thank God President Trump is building a ballroom at the White House." Quote, "Now you know why the left is suing to block Trump's privately funded White House ballroom," declared an account named End Wokeness, with far-right loon and daughter of the late Senator John McCain, Meghan McCain, using profanity to demand, quote, "I don't want to hear one more effing criticism of Trump's new ballroom at the White House." And it went on and on and on and on like that. As if right-wing influencers on social media had somehow received some sort of directive or something all at once to, you know, use the same, almost exactly the same wording over and over again. Of course, setting aside the fact that private events, even when the president speaks at them, like the White House Correspondents' Dinner, are not held with taxpayer money on White House grounds, the president of the United States speaks to hundreds of different groups all over the country each year, including at political events, which are also not allowed to be held on the White House on government property. Are these dopes now claiming that every time a president speaks, it must be at the White House ballroom, that we have to move hundreds and thousands of people and events to the White House, private events, because it's simply too dangerous for him or her to do so anywhere else? There'll be no appearing at campaign events anywhere around the country now. Everybody's got a, you live in Ohio, you live in Utah, you live in Iowa, the Iowa primaries. Well, I guess everybody in Iowa has to go to the White House, to the ballroom now, if they want to hear the president.
And if they're going to focus just on Trump, I mean, are they going to have Trump play golf in the ballroom? Because, frankly, he goes and plays on an open public course every single
weekend.
No,
this is a really big ballroom. It's going to include at least a mini mini golf in there. But no windmill on the 18th hole, though. He hates that. He hates the windmills. So, what, you know, are these dopes, is this what they're talking about? Or, you know, or is it that they are mindlessly bleeding back whatever it is their cult leader wishes them to say? You may have a thought on that. You may even be led by a cult leader. If so, if you'd like to bleat in that direction, we'd love to hear from you. You go to the top of the call list because of DEI. Give me a ring at 818-985-5735. So, okay, the administration does not want to talk about gun laws in the wake of at least the fourth known assassination attempt of Donald Trump with guns, but they do want us to talk about the ballroom, which, as he noted, or at least claimed, will be built with private money. Hundreds of millions of dollars, in fact, of private money given to him to use on his ballroom by people and companies who clearly want favors from him and from the federal government. In just the past week, we have learned in two different exclusives that, according to the one from the New York Times, that the firm building Donald Trump's ballroom got a secret no-bid contract for a nearby job. As the Times reported on Saturday, before the incident on Saturday night, quote, "To build his mammoth White House ballroom, President Trump last summer chose Maryland-based Clark Construction. Since then, Trump has repeatedly sung the company's praises, even saying that he wanted them to refurbish projects all over Washington. In January, government documents show the Trump administration secretly gave that company a no-bid contract to do another job at a sharply inflated price. The National Park Service wanted to repair two ornamental fountains in Lafayette Park across Pennsylvania Avenue from the White House. The Biden administration back in 2022 estimated the work would cost about $3.3 million. But Trump's government agreed to pay Clark $11.9 million to do it, to do a $3.3 million job in a no-bid contract. And later added tasks that, what do you know, ended up increasing that contract to $17.4 million, according to the documents. Not the $3.3 million of your taxpayer dollars that Joe Biden, his administration, had planned to spend, but $17.5 million on a no-bid contract to someone, to a company that Donald Trump really, really likes for some interesting reason. The agency did so with the National Park Service without considering offers from any other firms, citing a rarely used, quote, urgency exception to normal open bidding procedures, usually meant for emergencies. Like war or natural disasters, that urgency exception. By law, federal agencies are otherwise supposed to seek competing bids to find the vendor that provides the best deal. Didn't happen here. That contract has not been previously reported on until this past weekend by the New York Times. The Trump administration did not post it in public databases of federal spending, although agencies are supposed to report new contracts within 3 business days. The Times obtained internal Park Service documents showing how the contract was awarded. Contracting experts said that the documents revealed that the government had repeatedly used unusual procedures to bypass competition for the project and to increase the price that it expected to pay. Quote, they just took the cover page off of my estimate and just added a whole bunch of money to it, said Stephen Kirk, an independent consultant who had estimated the cost of the fountain repairs for the Park Service back in 2022. He said, quote, I didn't add those extra millions on there. In January, Trump implied to the Times that Clark Construction had offered to build the ballroom, however, for free. Quote, they said, sir, we'll do it for nothing. This is the greatest honor, he said. In fact, Clark Construction is being paid for its work on the White House ballroom, according to the New York Times reporting, a ballroom that Trump says will be privately funded. And about that private funding, well, that's the other exclusive. The Washington Post last week let us know in their own exclusive just days earlier that the Trump administration's contract governing hundreds of millions of dollars in private donations to build Donald Trump's White House ballroom shields the donors' identities, excludes the White House from conflict of interest protections, and was disclosed only after a lawsuit and a judge's order, according to records obtained by the Washington Post. The agreement establishing the legal and financial framework for the planned $400 million undertaking, the most significant change to the White House in decades, was signed in early October. It was signed less than 2 weeks before demolition crews started destroying the East Wing of the White House.
Wait, so you're saying that it didn't work? Is it not working?
I can hear you a little bit.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So basically, you're saying that he signed the contract 2 weeks before the demolition of the East Wing, but nobody was warned about the demolition of the East Wing before it was actually demolished.
Yeah, that's right. And it's even worse than that. This story continues. The secrecy surrounding the contract mirrors the administration's broader approach to the project. White House officials have declined to disclose the total amount that they have raised, the identities of all the donors, or until recently, basic details about the building's design. Court documents show Trump knew that he was going to tear down the East Wing at least 2 months before doing so, but never told the public. So it's not just 2 weeks, 2 months. The contract provisions taken together, the Post reports, allow wealthy donors with business before the federal government to contribute anonymously to a sitting president's pet project while exempting the White House from key conflict of interest safeguards and limiting security by Congress and the scrutiny by Congress and the public. Basically, he can do anything he wants. He's a king. Provisions peppered throughout the agreement prevent the signatories from revealing the identities of the anonymous donors, and a review process for detecting conflicts of interest with the Park Service and the Interior Department makes no mention of doing the same for the president, White House officials, or the 14 other executive departments that he oversees. There will be no review at all, apparently, of conflict of interests for Donald Trump, for White House officials, and most of the executive departments that he directly oversees. That's the plan. Do you like it? Give me a call, 818-985-5735. I'd love to hear from the Trump supporters. There's a lot of them. They were out in
out in droves on Twitter and Truth Social over the weekend demanding the ballroom be built. That's what they want to talk about. So give me a call. Tell me why we should build this ballroom. Love to hear from you. 818-985-KPFK. Dozens of the project's known donors, including Amazon, Lockheed Martin, Palantir, Google, they collectively have billions of dollars in federal contracts before the administration, and you are not allowed to know about the anonymous gifts otherwise to a sitting president's signature project or the conflicts of interest that they create. Quote, this document reveals that anonymous donations are the heart of this agreement. That, according to John Gollinger, a lawyer and public policy advocate with the nonpartisan Good Government Watchdog Public Citizen. Who are these anonymous donors? And what are they hiding? Great question, he asked. Now, since Trump and his supporters want us to talk about that ballroom so much, I was going to do a deep dive into some of the details from those two articles and the contracts and the agreements that were unearthed, because they're kind of gobsmacking. I figured you might want to talk about them in addition to the attempted assassination at the correspondents' dinner at 818-985-5735. But then Donald Trump went on 60 Minutes on Sunday night for an interview with CBS's Nora O'Donnell. As you know, Trump buddies now control CBS. And Nora has always been a favorite of the White House. And she asked him about remarks in that so-called manifesto by the alleged shooter of Saturday night's attempted assassination. And here's how that went.
The so-called manifesto is a stunning thing to read, Mr. President. He appears to reference a motive in it. He writes this, quote, administration officials, they are targets. And he also wrote this, I am no longer willing to permit a pedophile, rapist, and traitor to coat my hands with his crimes. What's your reaction
to that?
Well,
I was waiting for you to read that because I knew you would, because you're horrible people, horrible people. Yeah, he did write that. I'm not a rapist. I didn't rape anybody.
Do you think he was referring
excuse me,
to you?
Excuse me. I'm not a pedophile. You read that crap from some sick person. I got associated with all stuff that has nothing to do with me. I was totally exonerated. Your friends on the other side of the plate are the ones that were involved with, let's say, Epstein or other things. But I said to myself, you know, I'll do this interview and I read the manifesto, you know, he's a sick person, but you should be ashamed of yourself reading that because I'm not any of those things.
Mr. President,
and I
these
was
are
never,
the
excuse
gunman's
me,
words.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't be reading that on 60 Minutes. You're a disgrace, but go ahead. Let's finish the interview.
The other thing that he wrote in the...
So interesting. Donald Trump himself seemed to believe that the shooter was referring to him as a rapist and a pedophile. And wow, Donald Trump really doesn't want to talk about that. In fact, he arguably brought the nation and the world to war in order to avoid talking about exactly that. So everything sort of comes full circle, it seems to me. What do you want to talk about today? 818-985-5735 if you're in our live Southern California listening area or listening live anywhere around the globe via the live kpfk.org web stream. I've had a couple of stories that I've been trying to get to now for 3 weeks in a row, and if crap like this would simply stop happening over the weekend, I might get to it concerning specifically California and voting. But I guess that is going to have to be kicked down the road again because of the madness of this White House. And I will say this. As the nation was trying to figure out, you know, what had gone on at the White House correspondents' dinner on Saturday night, of course, a lot of claims and wild conspiracy theories were flying about all of it in the absence of actual evidence at the time, and given the fact that this White House has a proclivity to lie about absolutely everything. And as you heard at the top of this show when we started today, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt's pre-dinner claim that, quote, shots will be fired. Well, that was a strange turn of phrase. which she presumably meant in a completely different context in reference to Trump's planned remarks, which he never gave, in which he was planning, we're told, to attack the press themselves in his remarks, which Carolyn was very excited about hearing at what was supposed to be a celebration of the First Amendment. Instead, as noted, celebration of the Second. On Sunday morning, writer Natasha Devon posted on social media as the conspiracy theories were flying, quote, "May I cautiously suggest that if large swaths of people are assuming last night's attempt was faked, that's less the fault of conspiracy theorists and more a reflection of the fact that nothing related to the White House right now can be taken at face value." She is, of course, right about that. And while I see no evidence myself, zero, none, of the conspiracy theory that so many have been talking about, that this was somehow all staged by the White House to, you know, help him push for his ballroom, to help distract from his failures in the Iran war, which was, in fact, meant as a distraction to his failures, his revelations in the Epstein files. Well, you're welcome to say whatever you like at 818-985-5735. I don't see it as evidence of a conspiracy in this case, but you might. And if you do, you should be prepared to defend it. 818-985-KPFK is our phone number. Let's take a quick break here, and we will come back with your calls on, all of the above today, if you like, where we really do, unlike the administration, which is now, you know, demanding again, by the way, that Jimmy Kimmel be fired from ABC because of a joke that he told last week describing Melania Trump as an expecting widow. Here, give us a call where we really do celebrate the First Amendment. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Brandcast.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back. It's The Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Our phone number is 818-985-5735. Hey, don't wait until we're almost off the air. I realize I ran a little bit long. Had a whole lot to cover today, a whole lot that I did not expect I was going to be covering today. 818-985-5735. Let's go to Huey in San Gabriel Valley. Hey, Huey, welcome to The Bradcast. What's the news, Huey?
Hey, first of all, I want to say thank you for upholding our First Amendment and allowing people to call and have a conversation. I think it's really needed.
Excellent.
I think, you know, the assassination attempt against Donald Trump, I think, while, you know, I abhor any sort of this type of adventuristic violence, I think it speaks to a larger issue that a lot of the people in this country are dealing with, right? Our country is ran by an Epstein class that, is continually making our lives more difficult, mm-hmm. Starting new wars, mm-hmm. Generally just making the lives of working class people a nightmare.
Yeah.
And so I think, I think it's abhorrent to do these adventuristic type violence. I think that it's something that's going to happen more often,
mm-hmm.
because the American people are kind of waking up to what the American government has been conducting and been involved in now for a long, long time. And
let me just say that I agree with you on all of those points, and I do want to underscore that no matter if you feel that way, and it's completely understandable that people do, the answer to that is not trying to kill the president. The answer to that is not trying to kill anyone, and I thank you for making that point several times here. But yeah, people are angry, and people have every right to be angry right now. And that is something that they also don't want us to talk about, it seems to be, at the White House.
No, absolutely not. And to speak to the answer, right, I think the answer to this is we have to organize, right? The working class people of this country have not had any sort of sovereign power to dictate how their lives are run and how their government is run for a very long time. And the only answer to that is to come together in common cause and build a popular front that could potentially, you know, overthrow this corrupt, pedophile government. And I'm actually a member of the American Communist Party. You can look us up at acp.us. We actually recently posted a video on our Twitter at acp.main speaking to this very thing, right? We have to build popular sovereignty in this country again, because the leaders of this country have shown time and time again that not either they are involved in the hideous, horrendous things that have been going on, like the Epstein files, like warmongering for a very long time, or they are too cowardice to actually stand up to the government.
Thank you, Huey. I really do appreciate all of your thoughts. Thanks for calling in. 818-985-5735. 818-985-KPFK. Let me very quickly play this. As usual, we hear this every time after one of these shootings where they turn to Democrats. This was Dana Bash on CNN, I think, turning to Jamie Raskin and asking, hey, don't the Democrats need to tone down the rhetoric so this stops happening?
And you have, as many of your fellow Democrats, have used some heated rhetoric against the president. And do you think twice about that when something like this happens?
But what rhetoric do you have in mind?
Talking about some of the fact that he, you know, is terrible for this country and so on and so forth. I understand that that's your Democratic right. Overall,
yeah.
Do you
have no personal problem with Donald Trump at all? I mean, I talk about the policies of this administration, the authoritarianism like we saw on display in Minneapolis, where two of our citizens were gunned down in the streets simply for exercising their First Amendment rights, Renee Good, Alex Preddy, and others have, you know, died in custody. I'm talking about policies. I don't personalize it, and I certainly have never called the press the enemy of the people. I think the press are the people's best friend, and that's why it's written right there into the First Amendment. We need the press to be a vigilant watchdog against every level of government, federal, state, local, all of it.
Right. Right. Is that the Democrats and their rhetoric that causes these problems that every time it happens, we hear about? It is the president of the United States repeatedly, year after year after year, identifying the media as the enemy of the people, using the most harsh language to describe all sorts of people that he does not like, that he is clearly painting a target on, making fun of actual politicians like Melissa Hortman up in Minnesota, who was actually killed, the Democratic Speaker of the House over the past year. And he made fun of that. And he made fun over and over again of when a man broke into Nancy Pelosi's house and bashed her husband's head in with a hammer. Don Jr. couldn't get enough of that joke. He thought it was hilarious. But yeah, maybe the Democrats need to cool their rhetoric to avoid all of this. 818-985-5735. 818-985-KPFK.
Well, also, you know, I just want to... My mic's not working again.
You know,
it's
working there.
Now?
Yeah,
okay,
just
a
little
go.
Low.
Turn all right,
there
can you hear me now? All right, so quickly, by the logic that, oh, it's the Democrats that have to tone down the rhetoric,
yeah.
Well, then maybe Trump should fire his vice president, because remember, it was Vice President J.D. Vance that compared Trump to Hitler.
Yeah. That J.D. Vance needs to tone down his rhetoric. Also, I think the president needs to tone down his policies. He's now targeted more than 50 boats out in the Pacific, killing almost 200 people that we have no idea if they have committed any crime. He's killed thousands in Iran. And yes, people are dying in his ICE prison under his watch, and American citizens are being targeted. So who needs to turn down the rhetoric? 818-985-5735. Amir in Agoura Hills. Hey, Amir, welcome to the broadcast.
Yes, I think it's a conspiracy because one of the reasons they're mentioning by train is that because we're turning into a police state. So that was the only place that you could basically travel without having to go through security. So now that's going to be, they're going to put ICE in there and, you know, secure those stations
but
as
what,
well.
What's the conspiracy? You're saying that the Trump administration themselves staged this, had this guy go out and bring a gun to the Washington Hilton?
Yeah, the other thing is that he didn't get shot. There was multiple shooting. You can see from the video that as soon as he runs past, two officers pull up their gun, but he's not even shot.
Yeah, well, that's right. He wasn't anywhere near the president ultimately, but why would they send out a guy and have him write a note calling out the Epstein files, suggesting that Donald Trump is a pedophile, and then letting this guy live at the end, so for the rest of his life, he has this story that he can use against them. Why would they do that? If it's a conspiracy theory, it seems like the worst conspiracy ever. No, Amir?
No. Okay. When he goes to court, we know that, you know, he's going to get sentenced for life.
Yeah.
But we never know, you know, what happens to him next. Maybe he's out, and nobody talks about that.
Well, if he gets out, how does that help?
If you look back during Nixon times, there was a couple of guys that were incriminated, and they were supposed to be serving in jail, but they never did. Years after, we found out that they never actually went to jail.
Okay, so you think this guy is going to secretly get out, secretly be available, and secretly, I guess, be...
They would change his name, and he would be...
All right. Thanks, Amir. I appreciate that. I'm not sure there's a lot of evidence to support that, but I'm glad to get it on the record. Marlene in Valley Village. Hey, Marlene, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, Brad. Hi.
Oh, hi.
I'm liking the conversation.
Thank you.
I'm getting an echo, so I don't know if it's me or you.
Ah.
But what it is that Donald Trump spread so much meanness since the beginning. I mean, making fun of disabled, the way even Nora Donnell, how he talked to her the other night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like she's a horrible person, and calling these women stupid and stuff. And the deportations, I mean, there's just so much meanness he has created.
Yeah, but he doesn't deserve to be shot and killed by an assassin.
No. You know, I tell you what I thought about the 15 minutes or 20 minutes after the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because I've been to fundraisers. My concern was what's going to happen to those 2,500 meals.
Oh, to the meals that did not get served after they enjoyed the appetizers, apparently, as Wolf Blitzer told us 20 times. Yeah.
The food, because that could have been, you know, given to the, you know, the centers in Washington, D.C.
Yep.
The food. Anyway.
Well, we hope they did. And I hear you. I hear you, Marlene. I hope that did happen. Thanks. I got to run here. I'm coming up to the end of the hour, unfortunately. I appreciate it.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, good.
I could hear you before, too. It just wasn't very loud.
Is it better now?
It's perfect.
Excellent. Well, I just want to point out follow along on Marlene's comment that also spare a thought for all of the staff at the Hilton, all the catering staff, the waiters, and the guards, and the folks who work there every single day, that they also had to deal with this. And I doubt that they got hazard pay for that.
There you go. All right, one last call here before we get out. Our old friend who we haven't heard from in a while. Hey, Mo in Long Beach. It's Morris. How are you, brother? What's on your mind, my friend?
I'm doing fine, Bradley. I just wanted to let you know that I am not a racist. and I'm not guilty of the Emoluments Clause violations. I'm not guilty of espionage violations. I am not a tax cheat. Uh-huh. All six of my bankruptcies were legal, and the Epstein files are a Democratic hoax. Okay?
Thank you. All right.
I'll talk to you in a
minute. I appreciate you clearing that up, Morris. I think when a lot of people saw what that alleged shooter had to say, they thought it might be referring to Mo. So I'm glad we have cleared that up, because sometimes you hear that, you know, you just suddenly think, oh, gosh, people might think I'm a pedophile. I better clarify it, as the president found himself doing on Sunday night for some odd reason.
You know, and I also want to add one more quick thing.
You've got to be quick. We got to get out. Well, I'm looking at the clock.
Well,
yes.
Yeah, yes, I know. Well, I just wanted to point out that the no one, I don't think, actually voted for Trump because they were demanding more ballroom.
Well, you know, you the way you've described that.
I'm sorry, let me
set that up.
They were not demanding that Trump build a new ballroom.
I'm going to need way more time at the end of the show to respond to that question. So get me out of here, Will. All right. Thanks to everybody who called in. My apologies to everyone who we just didn't have time for whom there was no ballroom left. All right. Thanks to our producer, Des Doyen, to all of you who called in. Thanks to all of you who listened today, tomorrow, and hopefully the next day to the Bradcast. I do hope you will check out our all-new bradblog.com. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, you can download it for free anytime. It's easier than ever at bradblog.com. Check out our really cool media player. Leave a comment at the site and a really cool new comment system designed from the ground up. And, of course, drop me email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. And you'll find me on the social medias, especially Blue Sky at The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, hopefully tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Listening to the Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.